Hello and welcome to the Experience Growth Podcast. In this episode, we are going to discuss how to raise your investment by integrating science and spirituality for your own personal empowerment. In this episode, we're going to understand human motivation with the lens of Western psychology and Eastern spirituality. We're then going to explore the world of enhancing our cognitive function. We're both going to learn by neuroscience and meditation. And then we're going to explore a third area of cultivating emotional resilience. Again, we swim in the seas of Western behavior science, and then we swim back into the world of yoga and Tai Chi to try and understand emotional resilience. Towards the end of the episode, we then go into the concept of connecting with our higher self, and we look at transpersonal psychology, and we look at Eastern mysticism. So the purpose of this episode is also the same as lesson one, which you can access in the Experience Growth platform for free, just by joining our waiting list. So find the link wherever you get your podcasts or wherever you're watching this episode, and join the waiting list so that you can get access to everything we've just discussed. So what does raising your investment mean? Hello and welcome to the Experience Growth Podcast. This episode is all about raising your investment and learning how you can integrate science and spirituality for your own personal empowerment. Throughout this episode, we're going to go into topics such as understanding human motivation, how to enhance our cognitive function, how to build our emotional resilience, and how to connect with higher consciousness. With every topic, we swim in the seas of Western behavior science, Western psychology, and we also swim in the other ocean of Eastern spirituality, looking at meditation, mindfulness, Tai Chi, yoga, and other types of Eastern mysticism. This podcast is dedicated also to the first week of the Design Your Future Challenge, which you can access directly in the Experience Growth platform. You access this just by joining our waiting list, and as soon as you join our waiting list, you get access to the Design Your Future book, the Experience Growth platform, the Experience Growth self-reflection questionnaire, and also a free monthly group call which helps you reflect on your goals for the month and set a plan of action for the month ahead. So raising your investment, what does this really mean? And if we look at this conceptually, all we really mean is raising your level of personal investment, meaning how much energy are you giving every day? How checked in are you to your day-to-day? How energized are you? How much do you feel a sense of personal empowerment in your day-to-day? Are you engaged? So raising your investment is just the first step, right, to designing your future and living a life you want to live. We're going to have to find a way to get engaged. And it's quite simple, because all we have to really do is start to look at the things that energize us, the things that inspire us. And we need to look at the obstacles along the way and find different approaches to getting to where we want to be. So that's really the key concept that this podcast is going to explore, is the whole idea of raising your personal investment. We're also going to explore some Western scientific approaches based on neuroscience and psychology, but then we're also going to balance that with Eastern spiritual practices which take a more holistic approach. Throughout the podcast, we encourage you to take note of the various approaches that we're sharing from all these different traditions and see what techniques, what approaches, what ways of thinking catch your ear, catch your soul, catch your mind on fire, and then go and do some additional research, right? And if you're stuck on finding out any information, you can always just drop me a message on any platform Me and the team will get back to you. So, understanding human psychology. In the Western world of psychology, we often refer to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And if you can just recall Maslow's hierarchy of needs in your mind's eye, what you will find is that the first level is all about finding a way to meet your physiological needs. Then it's your safety and security. Then being able to find love and a sense of belonging. And then to build your self-esteem. And then to self-actualize. And that's be at your best. Be in tune with the cosmos. Be in tune with nature. And be in tune with your sense of self. So that you can really be most powerful in the world. Now, if we look in each layer in a little bit more detail. Physiological needs, breathing, food, water, shelter, okay, safety and securities, health, employment, property, family, social stability, love and belonging, is friendship, family, intimacy, a sense of connection, and self-esteem is all about confidence, achievement, respecting others, and the need to be uniquely you. Now, self-actualization is just about strong morality, having creativity, being spontaneous, finding acceptance, experiencing a sense of purpose and meaning, as well as an understanding of your inner potential. Now, that's one way, obviously, of looking at how we can understand human motivation. Because what Maslow says in his theory of motivation, which is from 1943, by the way, is... First of all, a person has to start at the bottom. They first of all have to meet their physiological needs. You know, be able to breathe, have a shelter, food, water. Then find some safety and security. Then find love and belonging. Build some self-esteem. And then be at their best. However, you could also look at this upside down. And you could say, in the modern world, because... we all largely in the West at least have our basic needs met by the state if we need to have them met. So we don't really need to solve that, first of all. We don't need to meet our physiological needs. They're already met by society. Therefore, for those of us that are in that bracket, could probably look at starting from the top of the pyramid and working our way down. And that is, you know, what if we start by looking at self-actualization? What if we find morality? What if we find a way to be creative, spontaneous, accept our events of life, accept the outside and the inside world, and really start to drive towards our own sense of purpose and meaning so that we can fulfill our own understanding of what our inner potential looks like? Now, my argument is that from that place, you then build self-esteem from a solid foundation of knowing you. Because you now have self-esteem and you know yourself, you can really start to love and belong. Because you now have love and belonging, you now have safety and security. Because you now have safety and security, your physiological needs, it's not even something you need to meet. As we said earlier, they're sort of defunct for most of us in the Western world nowadays, because our form of government and societal systems keep us, at least our physiological needs, being met. So there's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's an understanding of motivation from Western psychology. Now, spiritually, if you look at Eastern practices, there was a chap called Kabat-Zinn who did this awesome study of transcendental meditation and mindful meditation back in 1994. And he found that by focusing on transcending ego-driven desires, we are actually, indeed, able to fulfill our spiritual intent. So essentially what his study and his work has allowed us to understand is that this stuff works. Mindfulness and meditation is a way of allowing us to understand our own motivations. It's also a way of being able to get us to understand the rest of the world and to get to a point of acceptance. meditation is obviously a difficult thing for a lot of people to understand. And it really is just a moment in time that you take to just zone out of being consciously involved in the world. Some people are actually in a meditative state when they slip into the bath, or when they go for a walk, or when they're in the sauna, or when they're reading a book, or when they're washing up. They just quickly enter this flow state where they're zoomed out of current existence. And they're sort of not really there. But actually their mind's processing loads of stuff. But they're not really engaging in those thoughts. It's just that those thoughts are passing and they're just busy focusing on where they are in that moment. And so mindful meditation can be walking. You can walk, and as you walk, you take, well, when one foot goes down, you breathe in, and then you see for how many steps that breath in takes. So it might take 2 to 3 to 4 steps, and then on the out breath, you let that fall for so many steps, and you count. And then you just try to get your breath and your walking in sync with each other for the same amount of seconds, or roughly the same amount of seconds. And then you're in this process of mindful walking. And obviously you can, of course, be seated in stillness meditation or mindful meditation, where you're just super quiet, you've nothing to say, you focus on your breathing, you focus on this part of your body, you focus on your third eye in between your two eyebrows in the middle, and you let that process unfold while you predominantly just focus on your breath, and you really intently in the detail focus on your breath. It's the only thing you pay attention to. And there's various different sequences and breathing patterns that you can try. The main thing is that you don't force yourself to breathe. So you're not sucking air in hard. The second important thing is that you breathe slowly and gently with no holding again. And the third thing, if you just want to calm, cool, relaxing meditation, is to let your out breath last longer than your in breath. And what you'll find is when the out breath is finished, naturally an in breath wants to come, because our lungs have the function of breathing. That's what they do. So we don't need to force them. We need to watch them breathe and experience that air flowing in and out of us. That's a bit of magic for you. So understanding human motivation, understanding our own motivation through a Western approach like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, or through mindfulness meditation, so that you can frame your own mind very clearly and strongly in your own sense within yourself of what that motivation is. Both very useful techniques. And it doesn't really matter which you choose or if you choose both. The main thing is that you get to one. Because once we can understand why we want to do something, then we can really start to increase our level of investment. And that is what this episode is all about. So there's at least two different techniques for you to explore. Next up is enhancing our cognitive function. Cognitive function means the way that our brain works. So what we're saying is, how can we make our mind sharper? How can we make it more effective? How can we sharpen the sword of our mind? And so Western neuroscience talks a lot about neuroplasticity, and this is the incredible ability for the brain to physically change its shape, to reorganize and totally adapt based on the factors in the environment that it learns from. and also from the experiences that your being goes through. So our brains change shape every 6 weeks. How phenomenal was that? And the more that we can raise our level of investment in our day-to-day, the more conscious we can become of what we consume and what we do, our brain will take the shape that we want it to take. So all we need to do is raise that level of investment to a certain level so that our brain can take the shape that we want it to take. And then all of a sudden, the things that we want to create, the material stuff we want to experience in our life, the internal challenges that we were not able to work on yet, we now find that we have gusto for, we have the energy for, and we have the brain sharp enough to do so. And I believe this was first studied in roughly 2015, and it's by Kolb and Wishaw, The Fundamentals of Human Neuropsychology. Enhancing cognitive function is also a very big concept in Eastern practices like meditation and mindfulness. And it's been now shown and even scientifically proven in the West that meditation and mindfulness increase your neuroplasticity, leads to improvements in your attention span, your memory, and your emotional regulation. This is from another 2015 study by Tang. And it's on the neuroscience of mindfulness meditation. So to enhance our cognitive function, we can train our brain consciously using Western neuroscience thinking because we have neuroplasticity. So if we can just make the right time, if we can get rid of activities that are not serving us and start doing activities that are serving us, our brain will start to take the right shape. So in that way, body creates mind because our activity and what we do shapes our mind. Now, what we're saying with the Eastern practices, with the meditation and mindfulness, because we know that it will, through silence and stillness and reflection and focusing on our breathing patterns, or by walking, as we were saying earlier, we can also sharpen our ability to pay attention, to hold information, and to explore our own emotions. So in that way, it's a bit like saying mind creates body, right? Because from our mind being calmer, we're now able to pay more attention, have a better memory, and have a better emotional regulation. So in that way, our mind is now shaping what we can do physically in the world and how we actually navigate our day-to-day activity. And the reason why I mentioned body helps mind and mind helps body is because we start to see the interwoven nature of our body and our mind. And this again is proven by the West, it's proven by the East, it's proven by neuroscience, it's proven by spiritual techniques and mindful techniques. They both come very much hand in hand and they help each other. So if you are trying something new right now, as well as doing the activity, don't forget to also take a few moments to meditate mindfully, whether that is a mindful walk, whether that is a silent mindful meditation, whether that is a nice hot bath, where you can just watch your breathing nice and slowly for a while, whatever it may be. Okay, so some more techniques for you to take away, to think about, to see what you might want to try and not try. Next up is cultivating our emotional resilience. Now, in Western behavior science, there's really a focus on our cognitive behavior, meaning how our thoughts over time become patterns, and those patterns in themselves create a resiliency in the mind, and which is obviously what we're looking for. We're looking for the brain to be able to be trained strong enough so that it can identify and challenge negative thought patterns almost automatically. And whilst we'll be conscious, perhaps, that that is happening, that we've had the thought and now we're challenging it and we're changing it into something that can be useful, that happening without us having to deliberately take time out of life to make that possible is really the nirvana that Western behavior science is encouraging us to have. How can we be so conscious about what our thought patterns are and what's happening in our own self-talk, in our own mind, so that we can start to challenge little parts of our thinking that maybe aren't serving us in the most powerful way? Maybe part of our thinking is prohibiting us from trying something new, from reaching out to someone, to speaking to that stranger, from starting that business, from sending that email, from making that phone call. And just identifying what that thought pattern is and then being able to challenge it. For example, in the phone call, right? Maybe you've started a small business and you want to start calling more people because you want to practice your cold calling skills and so that you can get more clients. So what you do in that situation, well, your mind may be telling you, you're not good at this, you won't succeed, they're going to say no, blah, 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 blah. And in the end of the day, whether you consider that negative or rational is not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is it serving you in the best possible way? Is it the thinking that you need? Because in the end, what neuroscience suggests is that we can challenge our thinking and we can create our brain to take the shape that we want it to take. So what we could do when we notice that this thought pattern of this phone call is going to go terribly wrong is not serving us in the best possible way, we challenge it. Is it the only truth? What other truths could there be? And you start reflecting on the outcome, then you start thinking of different outcomes. And you just deliberately stretch your imagination to think of more than one different scenario. And you find the scenario that makes you feel most alive, most alert, most energized. And you focus on that. And then you see what happens when you go into this experience thinking of the best possible outcome. See what happens from your own experience and see what happens to the outcome itself. This person that we've invented that doesn't want to pick the phone up for their small business, they then challenge their mind and they think, you know what? I'll have a network of small business owners that are in the same position as me, and that would be awesome right now. So actually, let me just pick the phone up and make a friend. Say, hey, how you doing? I'm a small business owner and I'm just reaching out to say hello because we're both small business owners in the same area and I'm interested in doing a bit of networking. Maybe that's a very different conversation. So, hi, do you want to buy my services? So the thought pattern has such a profound impact. And so Western neuroscience and behavior science is showing us the way there. Looking at our cognitive behavior, looking at our negative thought patterns, being able to identify them and challenge them so that we can have resilience in our mind as a default muscle. Cultivating emotional resilience from an Eastern perspective looks at more techniques like yoga and Tai Chi because they allow us to integrate our mind and our body through our breath all in the same moment. And that supreme ultimate union of the mind, the body and the breath is in itself what has been also now scientifically proven to reduce stress, to create more resilience as well, to be able to be stronger in the world. Now, what's really fascinating about yoga and Tai Chi is that they both focus on what's called in Western science your fascial system, F-A-S-C-I-A-L. And this is a system of connecting tissue that literally connects your whole body. including your ligaments and your tendons and your bones and your organs. They're all part of this fascial system. And so really you could argue that what we are, you know, what our experience is, we could be just the brain, but actually we've got this fascial system. And we know also this system of sponge that interconnects all of our soft tissue body parts, allows us to move, and it also stores thoughts, events and emotions in that tissue. So for some people that have got a bad back, for example, it's because there's an old thought, there's an old event, there's an old emotion that their fascial system has stored in that place. And so through yoga and tai chi, you can start to work your fascial system, because the way that fascial system gets enhanced is by deep relaxation, which then actually allows it to become stronger, which sounds strange, but it's facts. So what happens in the fascial system is that it's got a property called hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid sits in your synovial fluids in your joints. And when the hydrochloric acid is stretched through the fascial system, because you're stretching, then what happens is the elasticity of the hydrochloric acid is enhanced, and the fascial system therefore improves its elasticity, your ability to move. But the hydrochloric acid, when it gets stretched like that, because it has collagen inside, actually compounds in strength. So by stretching, it becomes stronger due to the collagen that's within that property. How incredible is that? So practices like Tai Chi and yoga are really, really good for your emotional resilience, because consciously or unconsciously, they're working the thought patterns, the events and the emotions of your life, and they're bringing an emotional balance through that mindful, meditative, calm breath. So you can literally breathe in peace, you can breathe in serenity, and you can physically change the composition of your mind and body because of the way that you engage with your breath and the movement. Awesome, isn't it? Yoga and Tai Chi for emotional resilience. So we're coming round to the last part we were going to focus on today, which is connecting with higher consciousness. And connecting with higher consciousness, we're going to look into Western transpersonal psychology, as well as exploring different states of consciousness beyond the individual ego. And we're going to look at incorporating mystical experiences and spiritual growth. And in a way, that Western transpersonal psychology really lends itself well to the Eastern way of thinking. And it's fascinating how they've now codified that into a Western approach. So on the flip side of things, the Eastern side, practices like shamanism or transcendental meditation, it's a deliberate means to connect to a universal sensation, a divine consciousness, and to feel within your body a sense of interconnectedness. So they both actually have the same aim. They both do believe in a higher consciousness, and they do both therefore encourage ways of getting in contact with that physically to experience that for yourself. One of the first times this seems to pop up in modern times is in 1963 by a yogi called Maharishi Mahesh, and it's on the title of the book is The Science of Being and the Art of Living. So fantastic. So probably from then onwards, it's been introduced to the West And this is why in 1993, transpersonal psychology becomes big with the Walsh and Vaughan book, Paths Beyond the Ego, the Transpersonal Vision. So we've explored many different ways to increase consciousness on this episode. So we've explored many different ways to increase your level of attention that you give your day-to-day in this episode. I hope something has stuck with you. I hope something has inspired you. I hope you are now in a position to be able to look at how you engage in the world around you and are able to make some different decisions that make you feel even more invested in the life that you live. What's been fascinating to me in this episode is just looking at the way that we contrast the Western and Eastern approaches, even though actually they often have the same aim. It's almost like the Western approach is a little bit more individual, whereas the Eastern approach is focusing more on a collective and this idea of a universal consciousness. It also seems that the Western psychological side of things is very analytical, whereas the Eastern approach is more experiential. It also seems to me that Western psychology is addressing lots of things to do with our identity, our motivation and our ego. And it's almost like looking at the ego, whereas Eastern spirituality is trying to look beyond the ego and look at where the ego might be limited. So they both go hand in glove, right? I mean, we should both, for example, understand what's happening now with our ego and then probably get to a point where we can look beyond what that is. So to recap, I think there's lots of synergy between the Western scientific approach and the Eastern spiritual approach. I would encourage you to pay no attention to the origin of where these things come from, personally. If we just accept that they are proven to work, then it's just about which techniques you want to engage with. And that's your own personal choice. I would remove any bias about science or about different religions or different cultures. I would remove any previous opinion that I've ever had. And I'd really approach my own experience of these concepts like a child would. You know, very open, very curious, without any bias, without any previous thinking on it, so that I can be truly open to what might emerge instead of being closed because of previous thoughts on the topic, but no actual experience, right? So what I'm encouraging here and what we encourage on the Experience Growth platform is real personal experimentation, getting your hands dirty, getting into that, the many different aspects of life, and being honest with yourself and continually trying more things to be better, to be calmer, to be more in sync with ourselves and what we want to achieve, and to just be grateful for the life that we get to live. So if you've enjoyed this episode, hit that subscribe button so that you can be notified when the next one comes out. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast and you would like other people to listen to it too, definitely like the episode. And finally, if you know someone that could benefit, please share this with them directly. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.